He decided he'd had it with the cockroaches. Steve Tran was tired of spotting them crawling down the wall while he watched TV. He was tired of the middle of the night discoveries when he turned on the kitchen light. He was tired of the rowdy cockroach poker games the bugs were obviously having in the dark corners of his pantry. Steve was just fed up and ready for revenge. There were stores in Westminster, California that sold bug bombs, and Steve bought some. The back of the bug bomb said that two would do it for a house the size of Steve's, but he didn't want just two bug bombs. He'd had it with the cockroaches, and he was ready to blow them straight to cockroach hell. So Steve didn't buy two bug bombs, he bought 25. Yes, sir, he bought two dozen plus one. Steve needed both arms to bring those canisters inside his apartment, and he needed quite a bit of time to set them all up. The air in Steve's place became rich with fuel, and the cockroach screams could be heard for miles around. Or was it Steve and his neighbors screaming? The thick spray reached the pilot light of the stove, ignited, and created the biggest bug bomb folks had ever seen in Westminster. Steve's screen door blew clear across the street. Every window and every piece of glass in Steve's apartment was shattered. His furniture caught fire, and the fire department soon soaked Steve's smoke-damaged belongings. It would take $10,000 for the apartment complex to repair the damage, and years for Steve to recover from his anger. And wouldn't you know it, the cockroaches were back by the following Sunday. The moral of this story is this. If you have a problem inside your house, be sure you solve it without destroying your home. Sibling rivalries have been blowing up homes for centuries. The Bible contains memorable stories of brothers and sisters who just simply couldn't get along. Joseph irritated his older brothers, and they decided that they could do just fine with one less brother. Jacob and Esau, their rivalry began even while they were being born. They wrestled in the womb. David's children were just busy through much of his life and their life just trying to destroy one another. When family members don't deal with conflict properly, sooner or later, the relationship damage is going to be great. One of the lessons in the Bible for siblings today is found in the home of Martha and Mary. Two sisters living with their brother Lazarus. Their story gives us a look at how God wants us to thrive in the midst of differences. If you're there with me in Luke chapter 10, we'll begin at verse 38 and read down to verse 42, the end of the chapter. It says, "Now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me.' And Jesus answered and said to her, 'Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her.'" Those who have sibling relationships that thrive know a few things. And I want us to look at a couple of those this morning. Sibling relationships that thrive know, first of all, that confrontation avoided is conflict in the making. Martha and Mary had different ideas of what should happen when Jesus came to their home. Martha saw a big meal and an opportunity for hospitality. Mary, on the other hand, could think of nothing but listening to Jesus teach. And then Martha traded in her gracious hospitality for some embarrassing conflict. Danny protested when his mother told him to take his younger sister fishing with him. Mom insisted, and so Danny obeyed. Said, okay, fine. She can come fishing with me. They returned after a short time. And so Mom said, that certainly didn't take very long. I hope your sister didn't make too much noise for the fishing. Oh, it wasn't a noise, Danny replied. There just wasn't much use staying after she ate all the bait. A third grade Sunday school teacher was giving a Bible lesson on the commandment, honor thy father and thy mother. And the teacher asked, now does anyone know a commandment for brothers and sisters? After a few moments, one girl raised her hand and said, thou shalt not kill. What's missing in the Bible story is a private conversation between Martha and Mary. That's not there. They could have got together and made preparations, allowing both the women to be sitting there and listening at Jesus' feet. They could have asked Jesus instead what he expected of them in this visit. He might have had another option. Maybe they could fast and enjoy fellowship in the Word. Remember, this is the man that fed thousands with a little boy's lunch. When a conversation didn't happen, the seeds of family conflicts were planted. And as Martha felt the stress of doing it all, taking care of all the preparations, those little conflict plants were being watered. They were being cultivated there and fertilized. And just imagine the anger that increased every time that Martha looked over and saw Mary sitting there when she was doing all the work of making these preparations. But Martha didn't address her concern to Mary. She did something that really caused the problem. She tried to avoid confrontation in that situation by going around Mary to Jesus. Instead of talking to Mary, pulling her aside, saying, hey, could you help me with these things? No, she went right around Mary and went to Jesus. That didn't resolve the issue. In fact, what it did was it made the problem worse. It ended up completely backfiring on her because Jesus, instead of reprimanding Mary for not helping, which is what Martha wanted, he corrected Martha about the situation. In verses 41 and 42 again, it says, and Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you're worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen the good part, which will not be taken away from her. Confrontation is frightening to many people. We don't like confrontation, do we? How many people here like confrontation? Nope, no hands. Nobody likes confrontation. But when you really think about it, if we have the right perspective on confrontation, confrontation should be nothing more than a conversation about differences. If confrontation is approached in love and conducted in love, it's a lot more pleasant than the growing conflict that can happen. Because we're afraid of the confrontation, we end up with conflict. The problems, the issues that are bothering us, they're still there. And they grow, getting stronger and ready to do their thing. We need to take a different view of the way we look at confrontation. Confrontation isn't us getting something off our chest. It's not us letting somebody know how we feel about something. Confrontation is dealing with differences. Discussing, having a conversation about differences, and confrontation needs to be approached with love. Because if it's not approached with love, it's only going to end up with conflict. Like Frank's apartment is going to end up a big mess. Because we're going to deal with overkill in trying to deal with that confrontation, using 25 bombs instead of 2, which should have been enough. Thriving siblings know that confrontation avoided is conflict in the making. They also know that serving one another is the price of success. Few conflicts in a family are the fault of just one person. If Martha's mistake was avoiding confrontation, well, Mary's was putting herself first. They actually both had a pretty good view of the situation. Neither one of them had a bad view of the situation. Mary was correct in listening to Jesus. That kind of opportunity didn't come every day. Martha was correct in wanting to provide a meal for the guests that came to her home. 13 hungry men don't show up every day, do they? If Mary had thought of Martha's practical personality, thought of the way Martha ticks, she probably would have helped with the meal. And then both of them could have spent some time at Jesus' feet. Now I know what some of you are thinking. Maybe Lazarus could have helped get the table set. That might have helped out some. But, of course, that would have been very counter to the culture of the day. And so that wasn't going to happen. Fred Craddock, in a message to ministers, he shared the practical implications of being consecrated to the Lord. He said, "To give my life for Christ appears glorious. We think giving our all to the Lord is like taking a $1,000 bill and laying it on the table. Well, here's my life, Lord, and I'm giving it all." But the reality for most of us is that He sends us to the bank and has us cash that $1,000 bill in for a whole bunch of quarters. And we go through life putting out 25 cents here and 50 cents here and a dollar there. We listen to the neighbor's kids' troubles instead of saying, "Get lost." We give a cup of water to a shaky old man in the nursing home. Usually giving our life to Christ isn't glorious at all. It's done in all those little acts of love, 25 cents at a time. And it would be easy to go out in a flash of glory, wouldn't it? There's one big flash of glory, and isn't that wonderful? It's harder to live the Christian life little by little, day by day, over the long haul. It's harder. Serving your family, brothers and sisters, those who are in your own household, that also comes at 25 cents at a time. Instead of competing against each other, siblings that thrive learn how to compete together by serving one another. That just doesn't come to us as children, does it? Looking at our brother, looking at our sister, and how can I serve you? How can I meet your needs? Now, most of the time, it's my need needs to be met, and get out of my way. Get away from me. You're bothering me. A mother of four told her Bible study group of a family practice that deeply impacted her. On New Year's Eve, part of her family's annual tradition included a circle of verbal support. Each family member took turns heaping positive comments on one person at a time. They did this every year. There was no limit to the number of positive comments, and no one was excluded. Even mom and dad heard positive comments from their children. More than two decades after the last circle of praise that she took part in, with tears as she remembered the effect of hearing her parents and her siblings shower her with praise, she said, "It was always absolutely overwhelming." Serving one another is the price of success. And third, thriving siblings know that knowing Jesus is the key to family success. This conflict between Martha and Mary wasn't the last time that we heard from those two sisters. We hear from them again in their home. They suffered together when their brother Lazarus died. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, and at a later time, the family threw a banquet for Jesus and the disciples. And if you turn to John chapter 12 in your Bible, verses 1 through 3 tell about that banquet. And then 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, who had been dead, whom he had raised from the dead. There he made him a supper, and Martha served. But Lazarus was one of those who sat at the table with him. And then Mary took a pound of very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. Did you notice that once again, Martha served while Mary worshipped, and Lazarus sat at the table with the disciples? Same scene, like the last time. And yet the atmosphere was different. And the question is, why was it different? The last time, Jesus was the teacher in their home. Now, He was the Lord who had impacted each one of their lives. You see, Lazarus experienced in a very real way what it was like to be dead and to be alive again because of Jesus. His life was impacted. Martha, in chapter 11, in verse 27, she boldly professed, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come to the world." And Mary, she worshipped Jesus with abandon, sacrificing a very expensive oil. as a part of that worship. Nothing will promote fellowship in the home like putting Jesus at the center of your life. And as Jesus becomes the center of each member of the family, it changes the whole character of the home. You know, they were doing the same things that they were doing before. The exact same things. Martha serving, Mary worshiping, Lazarus sitting there having a good time with Jesus and the disciples. And yet, it was very different this time than it was before. When each member of the family professes Jesus the way Martha did, every sibling will be on the same page. There'll be a common ground. Family members learn to see the strengths of the other personalities inside the family. If Christ isn't at the center of my life, everything you do is going to irritate me. We're going to be resisting one another. But if Christ is at the center of my life and I'm responding to that and following Him, then I'm going to observe the differences of your personality and I'm going to learn to relate to that. And I'm going to learn to complement that instead of resisting and fighting with it. That's how family success comes about, is by knowing Jesus Christ. John gives us a great word picture there. Mary's gift of perfume saturated the house. The house was filled with the fragrance. No one could escape it. On that day, when she let that oil loose, it hit Jesus' feet, it went all over the floor. And because it was an oil, the residue kept that fragrance there beyond that banquet and that day. It probably stayed there for long after Jesus left. For days, it would be a constant reminder that Jesus had been there. A constant reminder that He had made a difference in each one of their lives and in the way that they related to one another. When Jesus becomes the focus of your family, the difference will fill every corner of your life and it will affect every relationship that you have. Family heirlooms are often carefully handed down from generation to generation. And one family treasured a very old vase. They kept it on the mantle where everyone could see it. And when Mother came in from shopping one afternoon, her teenage daughter said, "Mother, you know that vase that has been handed down from generation to generation? Well, this generation just dropped it." Let me caution you. Don't you be the one in your family that drops the vase of being a servant-minded brother or sister. Don't let it be you.